Welcome to Systems Meet Humanity, shining a spotlight on the intersection where business structures meet emotion. I'm your host, Marina Darlow. Let's dive in. This episode, episode number 12, I get to host Jess Van Den. She's the creative and business engine behind Ethereal, a jewelry brand that specializes in eco-sterling silver wedding rings and other beautiful creations. She's also the founder of the Thriver Circle, where she teaches fellow makers how to turn their handmade hobby into a thriving business. I met Jess through her immensely popular Create and Thrive podcast, a show for handmade business owners. Enjoy. Hi, Jess. Good to have you here.
It's awesome to be here. I'm really excited to chat to you today, Marina.
So, part of the purpose that I stated when I started Systems Meet Humanity, I want to show my audience inspirational figures. And Jess clearly belongs in that category. We'll talk about systems. We'll talk about emotions, I promise. But before that, you know, she's one of those people who already have arrived. And just to give you some taste what it means that she has arrived, she runs a business. She has her husband pulled in into her business. She has a membership community for makers, which is also an educational hub with 500 people in her Thriver Circle. Her podcast, which makes me green with envy at this point in my life, averages 20,000 freaking downloads a month. And we haven't even talked about the fact that she sold over 3,000 high-ticket products on Etsy. And that's just the Etsy part of the business. So clearly, she's like there. Yes, I know you're still climbing higher. I know you haven't stopped. So with all that being said, I want to know your origin story, like in your human journey. Where have you started? What was your call to adventure?
Well, I am a bit of an accidental entrepreneur. I began my jewelry business as a hobby, like completely no thought of really ever making it a business, let alone a full-time business. I used to be a teacher. I used to work in education. And I was working at the time for a tuition center, maths and English tuition center, which, you know, we took kids after school. So I had a lot of free time during the day and I thought, well, maybe I need a new hobby. So I decided to go down to the local craft shop, get some yarn and try to teach myself to knit using YouTube videos. And this was in like 2008 when YouTube was just sort of starting to really get big. Mm. And I did that and it was kind of fun. I made a few scarves and I discovered that it was really fulfilling and enjoyable to create a physical product with my hands. Because when you're a teacher, when you work in education or in any intellectual sphere, your work is never finished. There's no end product. You're always part of a process. Right. And I enjoy being part of that process. It's really meaningful. But there was a different sense of fulfillment in creating something nice, something physical. And from there, I just kind of tried a whole bunch of different crafts. You know, I went to the store and looked around. I'm like, I saw the bead section and the jewelry. I'm like, oh, those look pretty. I like the colors. And why don't I try doing, you know, making some jewelry? So I did that. And I kind of get a little bit obsessive about new hobbies. So I'd bought all this stuff and I'd made all of this jewelry and it was all kind of piling up on my desk. And I thought, what on earth? I don't actually wear a lot of jewelry, ironically. I'm like, what am I going to do with all of this? And then my brain went, why don't you try to sell some of it just to recoup the costs of the materials? And I thought, well, okay, how am I going to do that? Because I don't really fancy doing markets on the weekends because I like my weekends and I don't like getting up early. And a little side note here might be helpful. I've actually been building websites as a hobby since 1996. When I was in high school, I taught myself HTML and used to build websites. And I'd kind of ever since then been aware of what was happening with website web development. And I actually had previously around this time had a WordPress blog that was completely unrelated to all of this. But so I was comfortable with online stuff, very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe I can sell it online. And I'd kind of then somehow, and I to this day, I cannot remember exactly how, stumbled upon Etsy. And when I did, I thought, my gosh, this is perfect. I can just set up a shop on here, put my jewelry up and just, hey, how hard can it be? I laugh at myself now. How hard can it be? Yes.
We're going to hear all about it, right? How hard it was. That's like the core of this interview.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Yep. And so I did that and I I knew nothing about business. Like, thankfully, the job I was in, as I said, I was actually the manager of this tuition center. And that was the first experience I'd ever had with business. And I'd been trained a little bit in sales and a bit about advertising and how to deal with customer service and stuff like that. So I had a little bit of knowledge, but that was literally my first customer service sort of business role since, 16 years old working in a shop. So I really didn't know anything about online marketing or marketing in general or product photography or writing descriptions or SEO or, so I was learning everything from the ground up. But one thing I did think about and wanted to do was share my journey. So I started a blog at the same time as opening my Etsy shop. And that blog was called Ethereal Designs and my business is called Ethereal. And I found an Etsy team. You found a really lovely bunch of people who I could ask questions and they helped me and they were amazing. And I chatted to them. They became friends. I chatted to them almost every day online and they were at various stages of their business.
Oh, so it was Etsy support.
No, it was a group of people. So on Etsy, you can create teams of people. So it was like an Australian team of makers. I think it took about a month for my first sale. And I still very clearly remember that moment when I opened my email and saw that I'd made my very first sale on Etsy. So this is the very first time in my life somebody had given me money in direct exchange for something I'd created. And it was so exciting. Like, I was just like, oh my God. And Nick, at the time we shared a study and he was next to me at his desk and I was like, I just sold something. And I was so excited, like bouncing up and down in my chair. And it was only like a $10 pair of earrings or something, but it was addictive, that feeling. And yeah. And I was like, okay, how can I do more of this? And that sort of drove me forward to improve everything about my hobby business, because it was just my hobby business. So this went on for about a year and a half where it was just on the side. I had a good job. I never intended to quit my job or whatever. And then we got married in the September school holidays here in 2009, Nick and I. And I went back to work after the school holidays and my boss sat me down and said, Jess, I'm considering selling the business. And he said, I want to offer it to you first. Here's the paperwork. Go home and talk to your brand new husband about it. And, the moment he sort of told me that and handed me the paperwork, I knew in my gut I wasn't going to do it, but I thought it was worth considering because what was I going to do next? So I took it home and talked to Nick and he's like, well, it's up to you. What do you want to do? And I said, my heart's not really in it to make this my own business. Because by that stage, I'd been doing it for almost 2 years and it had gotten very repetitive. And I thrive on novelty and learning new things. So yeah, I'd already gotten kind of a bit bored with it. So I went back to my boss and Nick and I talked a bit and we thought, okay, well, let's use this as an opportunity because he's actually English. So he didn't have a visa to work in Australia until we'd gotten married. So I told my boss, I gave my notice that I would finish the last term of school because school here finishes in December. Nick and I bought an empty van and our idea was that over the summer we were going to move back to my parents' place because they live on 6 acres in the country and my dad has a massive shed and every tool known to humanity. And we were going to convert this empty van into a camper van and then go travel around Australia for a year.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was the plan. And it was all going well. We bought the van. We moved back to my parents. We were living in their barn, actually, in one room. And at the same time, I had this health issue with my teeth. I was having chronic pain and it ended up being that I needed a root canal and then I had to get wisdom teeth out. But this went on for almost, I think it started in just that same December and it didn't actually get completely resolved till the following September. So once we had finished the van, we were stuck because I kept having dental appointment after dental appointment and we didn't have jobs. And I had actually shut down my Etsy shop over this period because I figured we were going traveling for a year. I wasn't going to be running my hobby business while we were traveling. Uh-huh. But then we were kind of stuck and I thought, well, I may as well just reopen and at least try to sell off some of the stock that I already have while we're waiting. And I did that and, it kept taking longer and longer and I had nothing else to do with my time. So I spent, I got a little bit of obsessive and spent, 12, 14, 16 hours a day, pretty much all day, every day working on this hobby business. And it just sort of started to take off and grow. And by the time my health issues were resolved, the business was on a really good trajectory, and we just kind of looked at each other and thought, well, maybe we should just keep rolling with this and see where it goes. And that was how it all began.
Talk about turning adversity into opportunity. Like,
yes,
my business was reborn because my teeth really bogged me and wouldn't calm down. And I had to keep appointment after appointment going to the dentist. I think I'm going to put it in a tweetable. You're welcome to tweet it.
Yeah, I will, totally.
Wow. Thanks. That's a very literal, easily translated, inspirational story. Like a textbook inspirational story. Thanks for sharing it. You know, you were talking about this creative process and how you spent, at least in the beginning, 12, 14, 16 hours a day hyper-focusing on your stuff. And it brings me to the next question. What part of your creative process, either in jewelry making or the course building, what part is the most emotional for you?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. Honestly, the most emotional part, there's probably a few. One of them is the moment someone buys it, because that's the moment where all your hard work is justified. So it's the point where, you know, you've gone through this creative process, you've created something you think people want or you think they need, but you're still, no matter how much research you've done or how many people have said, yeah, I'd love to buy that thing, you don't really know the proof of the pudding until someone actually does. Right. And that's a big moment of relief and excitement when you see people actually hitting that buy button and valuing what you've created enough that they're willing to exchange money. And this is something I like to highlight whenever I talk about this exchange. Money is an abstract concept. What people are actually exchanging is their life, like actual time, because they've spent time that they can't get back of their life making the money that they will then give you. So it's actually a life exchange. So it's a really powerful thing when somebody decides to spend their money on something you've created, and it's very humbling as well. And I still sometimes will think about my business and be a bit blown away with these, you know, how many people have bought jewelry from us, how many people have decided to sign up to my membership site, how many people have taken a course with me. It's quite overwhelming, because you think, wow, all, you know, there's hundreds, thousands of people out there in the world who have valued something I've created enough to give me a little slice of their life for it. So that is quite emotional, I think. And when you look at it in that way, it sort of hits you quite hard, rather than, oh, look at this, these dollars someone's given me. It's a different feeling.
You know, so a few things, because I want to highlight this part a little more. Mm-hmm. When I asked the question, first of all, I was really thinking about the process that comes before you even put anything out there for an offering, for judgment. Because a lot of people perceive that most of your emotional process happens before the product is finished, before it's ready for offering. Mm-hmm. And you kind of turned it on its head and said, no, look at this process. Look at when the money changes hands, because this is way beyond dollar signs. It's an exchange of life and energy. And I often heard the concept that when people exchange money, they actually exchange energy. You actually put it much stronger in terms of exchanging life. I've never heard it put like that before. So thank you for that insight. I think this is something that's getting very much overlooked. And because it's such an emotional piece, the systems around it are particularly crucial. So before we move on to the next emotional part of your creative journey, what are the systems that involved in this money exchange process for you, for your business, if you're willing to share? And how do they make this more manageable? In this high moment of exchange, when the blood of the business flows into its veins and gives it life, what is the support structure that you're using?
So the actual software sort of thing, and the processes around the sale. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it obviously differs depending on what I'm selling, because I sell different things in different ways. Uh-huh. So, you know, on Etsy or on our own website, you know, it's important, you know, something like Etsy, I have no control over the actual process. That's something that someone else has done. On my website, I have some control in that I can choose the software that I use to make it as simple a process and as enjoyable a process as possible for my customer. And sometimes, you know, these things can be frustrating for the seller as well, because you have this idea of what you'd like it to be, but you can't necessarily find software that does it the way you want it to do it. Or, you know, you find something that fulfills some of your desires, but not others. I'll give you a quick example. On my membership site, I use software called S2 Member, and the checkout system on that is actually not brilliant. It's a PayPal system, and the way it works for subscriptions is you have to use PayPal standard rather than express checkout, which is way easier and more pretty and more pleasant. So that kind of frustrates me a bit, but at the same time, you're locked in because you're using certain software. So there is that element of it. To me, what I like to put in place to surround that is systematic customer communication, which I have more control over. And this has made a big difference in my business in making sure that I create a positive emotional connection or experience for my customer and with my customer from the get-go, because that not only makes the sale a more enjoyable experience, you know, it builds an emotional connection that is not only positive just in general, because, you know, word of mouth is still the most powerful thing out there, and you want to have happy customers. And not just, you know, hopefully not just, oh yeah, that was okay, but oh, I'm really kind of blown away by that exchange or by that sale. And then from a brutal business perspective, if things go wrong, if something is wrong down the line, you're much better positioned if you have that positive relationship already with your customer, because they're more likely to kind of give you the benefit of the doubt and start off with a positive interaction rather than getting angry. Right. So that's a really powerful thing. So I have, you know, stock communication that I do and a system of communication that I have in place with all of my customer interactions. So for my jewelry business, I have a certain set of messages and things that I send. For my membership site, you know, when people sign up to that, they get an immediate email from software, but I also have a automated system of emails that go out to them over the first few days that tell them about how to use the site, what to expect, you know, educating people and making sure they know how to do things and what the benefits are, so that they're not just dropped in there and have no idea what's going on. So those systems I have found have been the ones that have been most beneficial around that process.
That's amazing. So is it something that you teach in the courses for your community?
Yeah, that is something I, especially obviously around the handmade business, I think I have a whole podcast episode about that as well, the customer communication, how to improve your customer communication so that you do build that positive relationship. Because I actually, it was thanks to a book I read, I think it was Bernadette Jiwa, The Story of Telling. And she gives a lot of good examples about how businesses have used telling their story to their customers in a way that has built that positive relationship. And it just sparked my mind. And that created in me a desire to do a whole overhaul of my own customer communication system. And it made a big difference in the amount of like replies I would get from people when I made a sale, and also the amount of people who would come back later and say, oh, I got the item, I'm really happy with it and stuff like that. So yeah, that is something I do talk about.
Would you be willing to share the link both to the podcast episode and to the book so we can put it in the show notes?
Absolutely. Yep. I can send that through to you. No worries.
Awesome. So my dear listeners, please refer to the show notes, the book that Jess talks about, as well as her podcast episode where she lays out her system for communicating with clients that makes such a tangible difference in her business, would be on the episode show notes. In my experience, communication is so, I'm not going to say anything new here, but it's probably, if you take one thing out of this interview, or maybe out of this entire season, by all means, don't neglect communication both with your team and especially with your clients. A long time ago, I was working as an intern, ironically for a designer. And as a lowly intern, I had the honor of quoting insurance for two of her cars. She had like a number of vehicles that she used around the business. A couple of them ran out of their insurance at the end of the year. And my design, quote unquote, job was to find better providers. So I spent probably 3 hours talking to insurance providers, getting quotes, trying to negotiate. I put my results neatly and I gave them to her. And she goes, "Oh, no, I meant the Ford and the Golden Wagon." I'm like, "What?" Because when she gave me the task, she said, "Oh yeah, the cars in that file." There was one file. And of course, the cars in question were different ones. Mm-hmm. Here's what happened here. I got really frustrated because A, I spent 3 hours on a completely useless task. B, I got yelled at by my boss. She got frustrated because her intern did something wrong that she didn't ask for. And God, why does she have to do everything herself? And see, now she has to spend 3 hours doing it because she cannot clearly trust her intern. And all of it could have been avoided if the communication was clear and she would tell me, "Marina, could you please quote insurance for the Ford and the Golden Wagon?" And if her filing system was at least halfway decent.
That's such a simple example that just is so obvious. You know, it could have been avoided so easily.
It was so painful. I remember it all these years later. I haven't been an intern in a long, long, long time. And I still remember, and I'm still pissed about it.
And there you go. I mean, you do something like that to a customer, they'll remember forever.
Yeah. But you know what? Let's go back to your creative process. Mm-hmm. Because I wonder, how is it different, if it's different, now versus when you just started your business? Do you have any challenges that are vastly different? Like, I'm sure challenges are different just by the very nature of the fact that your business had matured. Mm. But could you speak to those challenges? And when you talk about them, I love seeing everything from the prism of putting systems in place to handle the emotions that the process creates.
That's a really interesting question, because I was actually thinking the same thing, that it's completely different now to when I started. When I started, and I think a lot of people will relate to this, especially in the creative industries. When I started, I was doing it for me. I wasn't creating for anybody else. I was simply making exactly what I wanted to make whenever I wanted to make it. And that was it. And that was the case with my jewelry business. And it was pretty much the case with my education business right at the beginning, in that the very first product I ever created, a free ebook, which I still make available, even though it's very outdated, From Nothing to a Sale a Day in 1 Month. And it was one of those, you know, late at night, my brain just suddenly went, why don't I put this all together? And so I did, and turned it into, you know, a lead magnet. And that's how my email list started to grow. And I wasn't really thinking about my readers or my community. I just kind of put together something that I wanted to put together. And now my creative process is basically the opposite direction. I create stuff that I know or think my customers need or want, because I'm doing this to make money as a business. So I need to make sure that I'm not wasting my time creating things that people aren't going to pay for. And to create things purely for my own enjoyment, I do that elsewhere now. So that is a very big difference when you move from creating solely for your own fulfillment to creating as a business. And I think a lot of people struggle a lot with that, because they feel that somehow that's selling out or, you know, interfering with their creative process. I think about it differently. I think constraints are actually a positive thing when it comes to creativity, because it narrows your focus and it forces you to think a bit differently. And it also means that you may end up creating things that you never would have otherwise, because you get a bit deeper into things rather than spreading yourself across lots of different potentialities.
When you have constraints, when you pour water into the yard and it covers your yard with a uniform layer, say 3 inches deep, are you in centimeters in Australia?
Yes.
Okay, 3 inches is roughly 8 centimeters. And it flows slowly throughout your yard. Hmm. It's kind of everywhere and it's kind of shallow and it kind of has the slow energy. If you pour the same amount of water down a pipe, it could crush a really big barrier.
Hmm.
Its energy is completely different. It's powerful. It's directed. And it's the same way for creativity. When you focus because you were forced to focus within certain boundaries, you have crushing force. So yeah, but I do want to ask you, how do you reconcile that? I'm with you. It's not meant as a judgment, but rather as a showcasing of this is how Jess does it, and she doesn't sell out. She actually makes a sustainable business via a creative process. How do you reconcile these two parts of creating for your soul, so to speak, with creating for a sustainable business for your customers?
Well, everything I create is still me. It's still in line with my aesthetic. It's still in line with my core values and my why. And, you know, it's not like I ever deviate from those things. It's simply a case of matching. I call it the sweet spot, matching what I want to create with what my customers want, finding that where the Venn diagram overlaps, and that's what I make. That's what I end up actually making. I have lots of ideas that fit in either one of those circles, but don't fit in the intersection. And so the things that fit in the intersection are the things that I bring into being. And with my jewelry, that was a process. So when I first started, I was, like I said, just making for me, making to play with different materials, to play with different techniques, to see what I could make. And then over time, I saw what was selling and I made more of that sort of thing. It was still my design. It was still what I liked to make. It was still something that I was proud of, but it was more directed in the way that my customers were telling me they wanted more of that thing.
I see. And it was kind of a trial and error and correct course process for you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes so much sense. I want to take a moment off, like just sit there for a sec and let this sink in before we move on to the next question. You know, when you work with your students, do you feel that they go through a similar process with their creation?
Absolutely. Yes.
And what's their most common system-related challenge? Because we're about systems here.
Okay, so when people come to Handmade Business, generally, the vast majority, not all, but the vast majority that I work with are coming from a similar place that I was coming from. And that is, there's something that they like to make. They make it regularly. Someone has told them you should sell that. And they've thought, oh, maybe I should. And that kind of sparks the process off. So then they, you know, go through the process of trying to figure that out, figure out how to do that. Now, the most successful course I've created and my flagship course, which is called Setup Shop, is purely a system. So I created this course because I kept seeing people going through the same problems, the same obstacles. They kept asking me the same questions. How did you do this bit? How did you do that? How did you figure this out? And I thought, hang on a second, there's got to be a better way. What if I put together the entire process, and it's setting up an online shop for your handmade goods. That is what the course does. It shows you the system. I don't show you the tech. It's not about use this software and put this thing here. It's about the system of setting up a business online for handmade goods. So there's one lesson a day for 30 days. Those lessons are sequential. They are put in an order that specifically starts people at the beginning where they should be starting in the process and takes them through to the end of the process. Because a lot of people had no idea where to start or what was next. And I wanted to solve that problem for them. And that is what that course did. I took my own experience. I took what everybody else had been asking me and the problems that they'd be coming up against for this one specific process, setting up a good online shop. And I call it a system. I say it's not a course so much as a system. And that's kind of where that all came from, was looking at what other people were doing, looking at what I'd done, and trying to put it together in a way that made sense and took people. Because one of the really important parts of that process that a vast majority of people completely skip is the sweet spot test, which I was just talking about. Is the thing you're making something someone actually wants to buy? Does it fulfill a need? Yeah. So that is one of the very first lessons. And the amount of people who go, whoa, mind blown, I've never thought about that before, I might have to go completely back to the drawing board. It makes a big difference to do that at the beginning rather than when you've been doing it for a couple of years and not making sales and not figuring out why.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the question that I see a lot with my clients, because I create or sometimes fine-tune the systems for their business, not just for setting up shop, but more for operating an existing business already. Mm-hmm. And what I see a lot is people who are by their nature creatives, or who went into creative fields for some reason, they just want to do things that inspire them, just like you said, right?
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah.
And that is paired with the idea that they're not good on systems, and the systems are restrictive and not meant for them. They're the rule breakers. They're not there to follow any kind of rules. Now, I think in a sense, it's a kind of an immature approach. Sorry, guys. Sorry, those who feel differently. We'll have to agree to disagree. I'm wondering if you have encountered the same sentiment, and if so, to a large degree or not.
I have, and I agree with you in that if you actually want to make a living out of this, you have to get over that, because it's not about you anymore. It's about your customers. Sure, it's still, you know, you are still important, but you can't just do whatever you want, because you have to keep your customers in mind when you are creating a product line, when you are doing your marketing, when you are working out your branding and your aesthetic. You have to remember that you're not just doing it purely for your own enjoyment or your own fulfillment anymore. And if that grates you, you know, if that sounds wrong and you just completely push against that and rebel against it, when that happens, I say to people, is this really a good idea? Should you really be turning your hobby into a business? Because it will fundamentally change your relationship with that hobby. When you turn a hobby into a business, you need a new hobby, because your hobby is something now that is not just yours anymore.
Yeah. It struck me first when one of my corporate coworkers said, there's a reason work is a four-letter word.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, aren't you supposed to love your job? Isn't that the essence of happiness?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think it's important that you do work that you, you know, hopefully enjoy as you know, mostly. I think if you can turn a passion into a career, that's fantastic. But the thing people have to remember is, just because you're turning something you love into work or into a career or into a job, doesn't mean you're going to end up loving all of the elements of that now. Because, you know, if you like making something, like I like making jewelry, that is only, like, especially in the first few years, the actual creating, making jewelry part of the business is like a third of the business.
Could you
the rest of your time?
It deserves bigger letters. If it was like a blog post, I would highlight it in red, huge font.
Yeah. So the actual creative work is a small part, a third, a quarter to a third of the time you spend on your business is that. And the rest of it is everything else.
For a few years, please listen to this. For a few years, please don't heed those, I made six figures in 6 months doing what I love, Facebook gurus.
Like, that's rubbish.
There is a backlash against it recently, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But I've seen my share, and I felt my share of anger and frustration over these posts. So please listen to Jess. In the first few years, your creative work, whatever you're making, you may be making really good money. Your creative, soul-fulfilling work in that sense is going to be less than half of what you actually do day in and day out.
Yeah, it's so important that people realize that. There's so many people who just think, like I did when I started out, because I had no idea what I was doing, that I'll just create a shop and put all my stuff in it and everybody will buy it and all will be happy and I can just sit and make jewelry for the rest of my life. No, that is not how it works. And people do. They get frustrated. They get tired. They get burnt out. And I've seen many people decide, you know what, it's not worth it. And I'm just going to drop this idea of making it a business. And I'm going to go back to just doing it because I love doing it and doing it for myself. And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. If that's absolutely a valid choice. You haven't failed. You've just realized the value for you is in this part of it and that you don't value the other part. Like I enjoy business. I enjoy the business side of business. I find that really fun and motivating and challenging. And I love it because I'm always learning new things. If you're not someone who enjoys that stuff, you're going to find it incredibly difficult to create a full-time business out of what you love.
Wow. That's also a highly tweetable insight. My coach, and I'm probably going to quote her this particular part on more than one occasion, my beloved Naomi Dunford, one of the guests on this podcast, said in one of her blogs, if you hate marketing and you're in business, it's like hating touching people and being a massage therapist.
Yes.
I think she put it better. Like, I don't remember the exact wording, but this is essential. If you want to turn your passion into a business, you need to love the business itself. And if you don't, that's great. That's okay. In my experience, even people who are fine with the operations and the business itself still have many moments of, I'll become a clerk tomorrow. Just please leave me alone. I can't handle it anymore.
Yeah. So
there are times when we have these moments twice an hour.
For sure. All of us do.
Right. And that's reasonable too. But if it's something that makes you truly miserable and you're not cut out for this, for instance, if you're highly risk averse or if you are bored to tears with managing the money in your business, or if marketing makes you break out in hives, like it did for me, I think for some people, if you're like that, it's okay to decide to stay a creator without making it into your mainstream of income.
Yeah.
I have a really good friend who left a career in high tech and went to one of the fanciest art schools. That's, you know, one of those that takes one person out of 80 something. It's like really hard to get in. And he got in and he spent a few years getting a degree, being, you know, going from a comfortably well-off engineer to a starving student. Got his degree. And then when time came to find a job, very quickly, he went back to high tech. Not because he couldn't find a job. He was still is extremely talented. But he decided that he doesn't want deadlines around his art. You know, he came to this realization that he wants to paint, but he wants to work at work. And he wants to do art on his own terms. And that's, you know, that's a choice that makes him happy. If we're going back to business, because, hey, we're business owners here, and by no means I want to discourage you. Here's a middle road. Business starts getting easier when you put processes and methods in place. And everybody has a different route to putting systems around different aspects of the business. So I want to ask Jess, where did you start? In other words, what was the first area of business where you had to put a system around? Like, was it the most painful one to handle? Or was it the opposite, the easiest aspect of business to systematize? What was it for you?
Wow, you're asking me to go back. That's like 10 years ago now. Gosh, the first system. Something that comes to mind is, okay, first of all, I'm going to give you an example of one I didn't put in place and how horrific that was.
Ooh, juicy.
The first one I didn't put in place from the beginning was good bookkeeping. And this is a mistake I like to try to help other people avoid. The first year when I had my Etsy shop as a hobby, I very clearly remember when tax time rolled around the following year, I had to print out my entire year's worth of PayPal information and go through it because there were multiple currencies involved because I was selling on different platforms and I didn't actually deal with them at the time and get them in the right, you know, get them translated into Australian currency. So I had to go through and highlight things in different colors, like all these sheets of paper and then add numbers up. And it was just so painful and annoying. And I was like, why the heck didn't I do this properly at the beginning? And it would have saved me so much time and heartache. So that's a system that I very quickly then put in place to avoid that, going through that again. And oftentimes I think this is what happens is that you come up against something that takes you way longer than it should. And that's when you go, hang on a second, let's systematize this. So early on, I think something that I did was probably the most powerful thing, and it might not be what people expect, but it was actually putting in together a regular blogging schedule, because back then blogging was really powerful. I mean, it's still a powerful way of driving traffic, but this was before Instagram existed. This was basically when Facebook sort of was kind of gaining some traction. Twitter was brand new. Like Pinterest didn't exist. So blogging was the way that you got your work out there into the world and told people about it, and the way that you got traffic to your site. So I set up a regular habit system of blogging multiple times a week about different things. So I had, you know, I had a set, like each day, I think for a while, I had like a set theme that I would do each day to make it easier on myself, so I didn't have to sit down every day and go, what the heck am I going to talk about today? So that was a really powerful thing. And that blog was instrumental in building my business, and it has given me some wonderful opportunities over the years and built my profile as well. So without it, my business wouldn't be where it is today.
Thanks. Wow, that has been a super insightful and very energetic interview, if I may. Before we part, where can my listeners find you?
The best place to go is probably my website, createandthrive.com. And if you go createandthrive.com/10, that's 10, you can get access to a free video workshop that'll give you the 10 keys to setting up a successful online handmade business.
It's in the show notes, people. Look at the show notes.
And if you want to work with me, probably head on over and check out the Thriver Circle, my membership community. If you're a maker and you want a solid community of people who are, you know, figuring this out and who are at all stages of business, then come and join us over there.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all your sharp, on-point insights. I hope people internalize them, and I hope people share them with their friends. It was awesome having you.
It was fantastic to talk to you. Thanks so much, Marina.
And to my listeners, see you next episode.
Thanks for listening to Systems Meet Humanity. There are show notes and goodies at systemsmeethumanity.com. We'd love your support. Subscribe, leave us a review, share, tell the world. I'm Marina Darlow, and I'll talk to you next week.